Nancy Alvapendine will do the who's present and the intellectual property and then dive into it. And I depend on you, Nancy, or someone in the room to take minimal notes. Nancy will be recording, and Mike has agreed for this and the cloud session to actually do more minutes afterwards.
Yeah, okay.
Although I told Michael that I'll do the minutes of cloud.
Right.
Well, that's great, Bill, if you want to.
I mean, he'll
appreciate that. But, yeah, I'm sure he wants to do it for IPP because we're reviewing his specs today.
I won't deny him that pleasure.
Yeah, right. Well, in his spare time. But, you know, it's a matter of keeping the thread straight. Okay. I'm going to say welcome to the IPP working group session of the PWG face-to-face meeting hosted by Xerox in Webster. Thank you. And this is today's agenda, and so the very first step is, I believe, introductions, and then we'll do the intellectual property, maybe? Or do we do it? No, we do it the other way around. This meeting is being held in accordance with the PWG intellectual property policy, which in plain text means anything you say or write on an email list is a potential contribution to PWG standard or best practice. So please don't disclose confidential information. And everyone knows that who is on. Now, who's in the room?
Nancy Chan, Wikidata.
Dan Kosha, Xerox.
Jerry Thrasher, Lexmark.
Boo Magnific.
Peter Zaylor, Xerox.
Joe Murdoch, Sharp.
Rick Yardimi and Cannon.
Yogesh Hajaraman, Printer.
Mike Sandler, Printer.
And on the phone?
Lynn Petrie from Edison. Rich Blanchard from Apple.
Could you send me your name and email address? This is Nancy Chan at okidata.com.
For the minute. From Ashiba. And Ira McDonald from High North.
And for those on the phone, there is a WebEx running. The details are on the PWG meeting page.
Immediately above the actual agenda block, there's a link to the WebEx and the phone numbers.
Which apparently they know.
Yeah, which apparently... I was going to say, which they must know at this point. Okay, so Nancy, you're going to attempt to get attendees on Mike's behalf.
And, yes.
If there's any, I would say when we are doing JPS 3 in particular, because we've done last call, this is just a checking that all the comments were resolved. If there's any actual technical issue or that arises, if you would just take a brief
join the conference
of that so that Mike can be listening to the conference call, the recording to find that.
Yeah. Who joined? Who just joined?
On the telephone?
Well, the mystery person, apparently.
Well, this is for meeting minutes purpose. If you don't report, we're not going to record you on the meeting.
Could be Dan.
Okay.
They held in with a listen only. They can't.
Oh, I see. listen only. Okay, yeah, they can't speak.
Yeah.
As far as the website's concerned.
No, for the phone.
The phone?
There's a chair.
There's a listen only number, which we try not to publicize anymore because it's confusing.
I distributed those to the people at Xerox that were interested.
Okay. Oh, I see. Fine. So there might be somebody. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Yes, okay. All right, fine.
Hello, whoever you are. You're welcome.
Welcome.
Yeah, and welcome, and if you send Nancy Chen an email, nchen at okidata.com, then you'll get recorded as attending. Thank you.
I imagine it's Dan Mancala.
Okay. So first we're going to do a quick agenda review here. This is more or less the order of what we will do today, if we get to it all. And I see there, Mike didn't post a link to media standardized names, if we ever get there, Pete.
All right.
He posted it, I believe, a little while back, but we will see when we get there. I think he posted it last week. We're going to do quick status, and then we're going to review some specs here at various stages of review. IPP Everywhere has not gone to last call yet. JPS3 has finished it. Media Standard Names has not gone to last call, I don't believe. No, it hasn't. So we'll get to it. All right. Next slide, Pete. Officers haven't changed from yesterday, and neither have the document editors, and we need more document editors, as we certainly know when we look at IPP multifunction and the next year and a half's work with cloud and otherwise. Next. Yeah, okay. The specs that are in development, IPP Everywhere, IPP JPS3 is going to formal vote. It is after today. Steering committee will approve by email or by meeting that we've done the process, and then it'll go to formal vote. And IPP Everywhere will probably go to last call after this meeting, I think. We have to talk with Mike. IPPS, the URI scheme, and the parallel transport binding, which is a single page of text in the updated draft, are ready to go to the IETF for ITF last call. They've been approved for that in IPP working group meetings. The LDAP schema is the first complete draft that has OIDs and all the loose ends, the other actions from several previous drafts cleaned up. So this draft needs review, and we won't get to it yet today, but we'll do it probably in 2 weeks. Media standardized names, Mike, I wish you'd put status on here, I think is in prototype status and ready to go forward to last call. It is my understanding. Jerry, I think you had sent a couple of new media standardized names values that Lexmark found were missing.
Yeah, I sent a proposal.
It's a registry. If they're not, like, ill-formed names, I don't think we should, any more than in the printer bib, we should be pushing back on proposals to add names. We should just add them. But we'll talk about that in 2 weeks when we have Mike, if not before. The multifunction specs, Andrew Mitchell wrote a draft of scan service, an extensive draft last year that actually adds function to original PWG scan service, worth considering adding. And Mike wrote a fax out service, and we haven't worked on those lately, but they are what we will turn back to shortly. And cloud binding specs, which is the IPP6, the shared infrastructure extensions, which are just going to be after the model and requirements in cloud has the abstract operations that we were talking about yesterday. It'll just be a very brief IPP binding to those with, you know, respelling of attributes to lowercase or whatever. Next slide. Okay. And raster format was in April became a candidate standard. Who just joined? Someone else.
That was Diane, okay. Probably.
Oh, okay. Yeah, Diane. Okay.
Okay. And we keep Mike keeps a working copy of what we have ready to go forward to IANA, but may or may not have gotten into the IANA registry yet. And there is some content there that is about to be forwarded again. And we have a couple of small MIP registrations pending, and Mike knows what those are, and I can't even remember what they are, but presumably they're printer MIP. Next.
Probably stopped working.
Sorry, Pete. Document editors are needed. So this is the plea we make in the plenary and elsewhere, and we're making it again here. We really need new document editors because even though they are short specs, 25, 30 pages, the IPP bindings of all of the non-print PWG semantic model services are a lot of documents, and they are all in scope for this coming year and a half, to develop the full IPP multifunction suite. Mike expects to personally work on system control service, and I'll probably be secondary editor with him on that. But there are lots of others. There's copy, there's fax in and fax out, you know, completing fax out. There's there's resource service, which we neglected in our updated charter, but need in IPP multifunction. And there's the multifunction spec itself too, the profile like IPP everywhere that says use all of these 25 IPP specs. Next. Okay, IPP interoperability event. Mike had meant to have a release out just now, and I believe there are actually newer results in these slides. But I think he didn't manage to push the release out last week because I didn't see the announcement note. Did anyone else see an announcement note for IPP tool itself being reposted to CUPS?
Not yet, no.
Okay, I think Mike just ran out of time, and he's got the tool on his desk because a colleague of mine has a bootleg snapshot of it that works, so it's just a matter of time to, you know, commit it and build it in all the different binaries. It's the main deal. I would imagine that next week or two that will happen. There will be a future update to include tests for undefined attributes and groups, that is, for catching tags that are not defined being used, which is an error not caught at the moment. Plus, attributes and operations required by IPP 2.1 and 2.2, attributes, operations, and objects, such as the document object. Test results should be sent to Mike Sweet. Mike will always anonymize them completely, so what we simply did is, you know, we have this kind of a frequency of an apparent fault as tested by IPP tool, and we can talk about that. Final results at August face-to-face, well, maybe. We're not quite done with IPP everywhere. Okay, and thus far, Mike has not received testing results from any vendors, so he tested a bunch of shipping printers himself, and that's what we've done again. And if we go to the next slide, I think we'll see results from about twice as many printers as we saw in April, but still, this is a sample of printers that Mike looked at in his lab.
Next.
Yeah.
Okay. So I think it was a sample of around 20 printers before. It's now 43 printers from 10 vendors, and they are all shipping printers. Mike was careful not to take a free release or just being released. 14 of them report that they support IPP 1.1 as their highest version. 29 reported that they supported IPP 2.0. Now, this number is probably skewed. Let me say this. IPP everywhere requires 2.0. So Mike probably made an effort to choose printers that were quite recently released and supported 2.0. So we have, in the previous results, as I think we had only about 6 printers that were reporting 2.0 out of the 20-some. So this is more expanded. Okay, the average score of, all printers completed the tests, not with the February release, by the way. If your results differ, so do mine. But with the April release, Mike has caught the last couple of hangs in the parser where the tool went into the weeds. And those were caused by errors in malformed responses by the printers that were quite common errors among many of us. But nonetheless, the tool had a software fragility that's being corrected in the next release. In summary, therefore, having completed the test, the average score was 81% correct. This is a vast improvement over the larger, the smaller sample, but larger number of IPP 1.1 printers in the previous test. That is, ones who have bothered to claim 2.0 for that product from Apple or for other reasons have, in general, put some recent effort into their quality improvement in their IPP implementation. Get printer attributes reports all the required attributes as a common thought in online implementations. The worst was 47%, and the best was 97%, and I can't, and of course Mike will never tell us what vendor, but there was one single test that caused the 97%, and Mike said, it's a matter of how you squint at it. You could say it got 100% for its implementation. Anyway, if you go to the next page, you get this slide, which you guys probably can't read, and neither can I. Well, I can just barely read. But there's no practical way to see it on our screens without, you know, blowing it up too much. What you can see, the important thing I think you can see in this slide, is that there are patterns of attributes or error checks that are not supported by many machines. You know, that it runs across vendors where the problems are.
Well, I think that's a problem, isn't it? We don't know who the vendors are. Therefore, those groups might in fact be all products from one vendor.
Oh, no, they aren't. Bill, because he has a mechanism such that A, B, C, and D, and so on, are correlating with a vendor or an OEM in some way that he has anonymized. That is, you know that they are actually happening from multiple vendors. If you see F all the way across practically, then everybody's getting that test wrong.
Okay.
And since this is 10 vendors, I would also observe, Mike is perfectly happy to answer off list to any vendor about, you know, did you see the, you know, the binary question, did you see this problem in my printer?
Understood.
What he's not ever going to do is make any characterization among us together or in documents. So that's, and I don't know quite his coding mechanism on top, Bill, because this appears to show only 22 printers, but he did test 40. Maybe this is the 20, you know, maybe these are all the 2.0s. I don't know.
It would be nice
I'm not here to explain these.
It would be nice to see the vendors grouped together. So if one vendor has multiple test results here, we could see that group of results is from one vendor.
It almost looks as though.
Yeah, I agree. In the ABCD way that you and Tom anonymized IPP results.
Right. I don't care who the vendor is, just the fact that this one test failed in a single vendor across multiple devices as opposed to multiple vendors that saw this.
Right. Yeah, right. To make it quite obvious that it was localized to one vendor or two vendors, not 10 vendors.
Right.
Right. Because where it was 10 vendors, it may mean it's time for us to think about writing an errata to the relevant RFC or PWG spec,
right,
updating the PWG spec, because the spec wasn't clear enough. Because if everybody got it wrong, either everybody's not even doing the test.
Or the test is wrong.
Or it's not written right, which is really possible. Okay, carry on, Pete. There's another result, and it may just have, it does have the rest of them. I think, but I am not sure, that these letters reflect different vendors. Does J add up to 10? It does, doesn't it? Yes, so what you've got here is a whole lot of vendor D. And you have patterns across model lines at vendor D of some of the failures. But my point is that you can see again that this one, get printer operations default answering correct, fails on the vast majority of printers. This is a pretty bad failure.
Oh, the letters differentiate
them. Yeah, apparently.
Mike did follow the convention, but it just wasn't obvious because it happened that he had a lot of printers from one vendor.
I was looking at the screen, couldn't see the designations.
Oh, I see. The same
letter. The letter is the vendor, and
the number is the
different. The number is just a sequence number across all vendors of the printer.
Okay.
So it does show, presumably, that a particular vendor might be failing a particular test over several of his programs.
It does show that without identifying which one does. And it also does allow us to correlate, therefore, that a particular test like that get printer attributes default, that is without specifying any values, is apparently, failing some validation, in not necessarily the same. There are many things that can go wrong that have operation in every or most every printer retested. That doesn't actually surprise me. I've only ever seen in our test lab at Samsung one instance of a printer that did not fail some validation and get printer attributes. Failed to return a required attribute, or returned it out of order, or wrong encoding, or there's lots of problems in that operation. The new common problem was supporting create job but not send document. These printers typically did support send URI, but it's optional. Send document's the one that's required. So, notice, if you support create job but not send document, you now have half of print job. You have a broken implementation, because the purpose of create job send document was multiple documents by value sent as document objects after the create job and before the close. So, printers that have done create job and then just send URI are trying to support the common case of print by reference, although they could have just done print URI for that, because they're probably not doing multiple documents with send URI, they're doing one. And so reporting support for create job and send document, but it didn't work. That's the other. Sometimes it's said it did it, but it, in point of fact, failed the tests. In others, it didn't actually report supporting send document, which is mandatory if you support create job, by the way. Previous problems that Mike had found, and that he's now found many more instances we've seen, of not validating the request ID in an incoming request. This is a really bad problem, by the way, and not validating and order and the type of the attributes. I've seen this myself in output from IPP tool. It's pretty common failure. Returning wrong status codes, wildly wrong status codes sometimes, the moral equivalent of SNMP general error. It's returned by some firmware from some models, not really from any particular vendor in my experience, but some models were just real sloppy about their error reporting and kind of lumped it together and are not sending back in particular the important correct client error XXX that says this is what you supplied wrong. Without that, the client can't recover. Supporting printer URI, send URI, but not FTP URIs, which has been mandatory all along since RFC 2911. The support reference URI scheme supported, or reference URI supported, I think it's team supported, must include HTTP and FTP for all implementations for interoperability, because that covers the 95% of server-available documents, of file server-available documents. Using HTTP URIs for printer URIs supported, okay, that's been actually must not since RFC 2911, and it still is, and we are aware of the reason that it was done for IPv1.0, but please try to fix it in your IPv1.1 URI, because it causes more breakage than it fixes.
I assume with that, also the explicit port number should not be used.
The supported version?
No. In addition to using the HTTP URL, not using the HTTP URL, you should be using the IPP URL, and does that also imply that the colon 631 should not be present?
Yes, it is a should not be present, but that's by the generic URI scheme rules. If you're using, I mean, it's true in the RFC that defines IPP URI scheme, but we just imported the rule. The rule is if you don't insert the explicit number in the IPP URL. Now, bear with me a moment. However, the underlying binding over the wire converts both IPP URI to HTTP and IPPS to HTTPS for the request URI in the HTTP transport layer. So there, it is required, and it says in IPP, both the URI scheme binding documents.
You must insert
631 over the
wire. Join the conference.
Right, but my question is, in the URI supported, XRI supported, whatever it is, the URLs for the printers should be...
Yeah, must not have 631 if, or should not have, I believe is the case, should not have 631 if it's IPP or IPPS, you know, standard URI scheme.
Well, it seems kind of strange having colon 631 when that is the pseudo scheme mapping.
Well, it's I don't know about pseudo scheme, whatever.
Well,
yes.
IPP isn't a real scheme, so it's the only thing I can call it is a pseudo scheme.
Specify IPP and you go colon 8400, an implementation I've seen for vendor extensions, that's legitimate, albeit note that it causes interoperability problems, but it's perfectly legitimate. But if you specify IPP colon and no URI, the rule is, when you transform it to a transport URI for HTTP, which is no longer behaving as an exposed session layer, by the way, Pete, it's just a transport, you must insert the IPP IANA port 631 because it wasn't specified in the original URL.
Well, I was unaware that the mapping between IPP colon and HTTP colon had the inclusion of the IPP port as an optional feature.
I'm sorry, it isn't. When you say option, I'm not clear on it. This is exactly how it's worked since 2910. All Bob Harriott and I did later in RFC 3510 was to write it up more, register it, and so on. It's the same semantics.
So, users are able to change the port of IPP by including it explicitly in an IPP URL scheme, in an IPP URL. They also, it's perfectly acceptable for them to have the IPP well-known port in the IPP URL.
No, it's a should not by generic URI encoding scheme rules. It's redundant.
Okay.
And I believe in 3510 it was a should not, and the new one, IPPS, that Mike and I have been working on, I believe it's a must not. That is, you know, it's redundant, don't put it there. Only put it there if you mean to change the port. And so you're making explicit that you're changing the court.
That's all I had.
Okay. Reporting duplicate printer attributes. I see this one really commonly, just in my, little bit of experience, with a few dozen printers from six or seven vendors, but this is pretty common in get printer attributes, and, it'll break a client that's naive, and it's a pretty bad bug, and it isn't conforming. Not reporting media size supported and other media call printer attributes. So this is where the printer does implement media call, right, which is still optional, by the way, in 2.0. It's required in 2.1. But it actually does not support attributes which are marked as mandatory in media call's definition, one of which is media size. And the last thing is missing job history. That is, a job finishes hanging around for a brief period of time after it runs, maybe a very brief period of time, and then instead of going it into history and shedding a few job attributes and becoming slightly anonymized and discarding the saved job document data, for instance, it simply is deleted. Which is very pernicious for accounting and for auditing applications. It kind of messes things up badly. So those are the main results. Next, Pete, where to get the tool. Here's where to get it. When Mike sends a note, which he will, to the IPP working group list, with a new release, I suggest you pick it up. The February release is stable, and if your printer is well behaved in its responses, actually runs just fine. It's just, it had a couple of hangs in the parser with malformed responses, ones that had basically broken brackets in their encoding of attribute groups. And how to use the tool, Mike's got an example here showing the capital dash I says, attempt to ignore errors and continue with subsequent tasks. And the tool makes a judgment about whether that can be done. And the T, it says, do the text format output. And the F says, here is the file to print when I come to the print job or print URI operations in the test suite. Otherwise, in a new release of the test suite, it's actually going to be smart and is going to finally not only parse and verify document format supported, but will select from its standard test files automatically. It does not do that right now. That's the one bug, That's the one feature deficiency in the February release. And in Mike's command line example, he used POSIX T to send it to the log as well as the screen. So that's what that last part of the command line was doing. So you put in the printer URI and you're done. You send results to Mike by sending them with a subject line of the form that he sent here. This is pretty much similar to a last call kind of subject line. Private mail, obviously. Attach your output from the IPP tool to the email. If you actually had crashes, please, or real serious bugs, please report them to Mike, and he'll probably ask you to run the tool with a couple of debug options that are command line, variables that you add. And that's it. IPP, JPS3, PWG, last call results. Okay, we did a last call. We had 10 responses. We needed 8. And which was 27 voting members at the time of the last call. And several had comments. Mike wrote up last call resolution comments and published a new version of the spec. And we plan to start formal vote 2 weeks from now. That is after we have confirmed at the IPP conference call that, we had no problems in today's review because Mike's not here. But in today's review, I wanted to say the purpose is to do zero future and further editorial changes. If there is an actual technical error, please bring it up now so we can resolve it before going to formal vote. But mere editorial, further editorial changes we should make as comments in the formal vote. And I think this is where we go pick up the document, Pete. And the last fall resolutions, that plain text document that he's got that other URL to there. Might help. He didn't put that link in the, it's only there in line in that slide. Or we can just spin through here and see what the changes are, but it, we probably ought to see what the comments are, too. Sorry. It's that URL right there, Pete.
Do you want to share the file?
It's downloading.
Oh, it's downloading.
That's what that old thing about me.
That was what that long sigh was. That was Pete going, isn't this
oh,
nice
I
the
see.
Way this is almost like a network? Darn small text file. Okay, so just starting at the top, there were 10 last call responses. Right, we needed 8. Okay, and the comments. And here we have comments from various individuals. Line 369, we should add addition device, we should fix additional device information. Got resolved. These line numbers may or may not now agree with Mike's updated version, but we can only look.
Do you want to flip back and forth through these editorial things, or
no? You know what I'd like to do is look through and say, yeah, these are editorial. Mike fixed them. Let's assume he did.
Yeah.
And only look, you know, and then we can look at the document one last time if somebody has a known technical issue.
Yeah, it's the technical issues that I just want to make sure that's been properly resolved.
I am not sure if any technical issues were raised.
I know of one.
Okay. Well, then we'll get to it, no doubt. Okay. So, yeah, again, that JT1 is pretty much a clarification.
Yeah, that's just a clarification. That's resolved.
Yeah.
Putting a comment in, it's just...
Oh, this was a request to insert a max requirement, and Mike rejected it with a rationale. So we should take a look at that for a moment.
That's line 963 or thereabouts.
Page 33, possibly, or something like. This is going to have moved, unfortunately, of course.
This
because,
is this?
You know, it was from clean text to
one of the. Which one are we doing? Is this? JPS 3. Okay.
JPS 3, yep. And the comment was JT5, and I don't know if Mike put the comment, you know, the square bracket JT5 around the comment.
And where about was it?
963. About
963. Roughly at page 33, Pete, in the original. And we're probably still pretty close because we haven't changed much text yet.
Yeah.
Oh.
Is it here?
I think this is the one. It is difficult to tell since, unfortunately, people didn't name the attribute they were changing.
Well, he had JT4. That was the
JT5.
That's the JT4 one. We're looking for the next one, which is JT5.
Keep going down.
No, the comment, go back up. JT is Jerry Thrasher, by the way.
Oh, hi, JT.
The document password supported integer has a range of 0 to 124. But then in the text, it says printers that support the document password must support this attribute with a value of at least 255, which brings up the question, why is the lower bound 0? Why wasn't it 255?
It's always the lower bound is 0 because that's, you know, it can be, you can set a smaller value, right?
You can send a smaller, but that's why I was asking.
Oh, I see. Shouldn't it be 255 to 1024?
Yeah. Since you're...
Yes.
Well, but the comment was rejected, so I was asking, if it's not, we need a discussion of the fact that printers have to support it. You know, their minimum and this gets into the confusion, is their minimum they can support is 255, but a client may set it to be down to 0. And that discussion needs to go somewhere.
I think this is the problem of, this is a capabilities attribute that does two functions, Jerry. If you set it to 0, you are saying, I do not support document password, but I'm being a nice guy and giving you the capabilities attribute to say, this is Boolean, no, I don't support it.
But
would have to have one of those discontiguous SNMP ranges, 0 or 255.
Does 0 mean not supported?
0 means unsupported. Or you can leave the attribute out.
Well, that's what I was thinking. I would think that printers that don't support a document password just wouldn't have this attribute, report.
But the thing is, Jerry, we did that in 5100.5 and 5100.7. There's a bunch of missing dash supported attributes. There's no way to tell without trying to use, for instance, an operation attribute that it's not supported. Bad implementation. Complete set of dash supported that said, here's the capability, it's not supported. You know, like we got Booleans that say, no, it's not supported.
It was only the
JG5.
So the comment
was... Yeah, and it got rejected by saying, okay. Oh, I see, this is a issue of referee.
So this is the comment.
Yeah.
And
what is there something I can set here to make it wrap?
One would hope so. But this is, you're seeing it directly in the browser. I think that's your problem.
Yeah.
The browser is just being a stinker about supporting WordGraph.
Anyway, the explanation is pre-wrapped. Yeah. So let's go to the explanation, because we know what the problem was.
Yeah, I think let's just go back to what Mike said about rejecting it, which is pretty much what we were just saying. So I think we need a correction in the text that says set to 0 if not supported, you know, must be 0 if not supported, or the range of 255 to 1024.
Yeah, I think that discussion needs to be, that paragraph needs to be, and discussion needs to be as, in there as a note or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's a legitimate solution, because I don't think Mike was, it was rejected. Now we don't need it, just set it to 0, only that, you know, that is indeed ambiguous, because the must support at least 255 implies that the value 1 through 254 are illegal.
Slightly.
Is that down one more?
Slightly. :0:55:1024? So it can go B0, 225, can you, but I don't know if it's standard.
You can do that in IPP notice. Pete, we don't ever do that in semantic model, do we? They have this kind of SNMP-ish discontinuous ranges.
Yes, we do, but it represents integers as keywords. And I think we do it in... There's a place where we needed specific value. I think it was like DPI or something.
Oh, yeah, all right. So this is kind of rare behavior in semantic model. We could do this, or we could just make the range 0 to 255, you know, to make this easier for everybody to implement.
A note saying that 0 means not supported.
Yeah, and 255 is the minimum.
And that 255 is the minimum non-zero value.
It doesn't really tell you that.
Right. So, I think the consensus here is that it shouldn't be rejected. We just need some additional verbiage to clarify the fact that this can be either 0 or a number between 255 and 1024.
Yeah, and also, I'm almost certain 1024 is wrong, because 1023 is the max length string data type in IPP.
All right, 1023 then.
That as a note, so Mike might want to do a double check that he hasn't used 1024 elsewhere.
Yeah, almost everywhere I've had minus one. I'm not exactly sure why.
Okay, so now we just want to change to 0 to 1023 and add notes about...
And add a note about the values 1 through 254 are illegal, the value 0 indicates not supported, and supported values must range between 255 and 1023.
Okay.
That the printer reports, however, the client can supply.
Yes,
a password
client
of length.
Can supply a shorter password.
Yeah, 1 to 1023.
Yeah.
This is the capabilities attribute that says
max.
You know it's safe to support
that's
supply
not
1255.
Well, it's reported min.
Yeah. That's the reported
max.
No, it's a reported max.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's from the client. If this is supported, can supply a value from 1 to the...
Whatever that reported
whatever
value.
That value is.
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
And in XML schema, I don't think it's going to... I don't think this is going to be enforced by schema.
No, I suggest that the schema range is 0 to 1023, and we all understand how to use it.
You're going to pass the error directly to your application?
I don't know. I'm not sure how I do it in XML. I bet there's a way.
We would have to make it, you know, multi-value. It'd be one set of ranges, whatever. It'd be set of ranges. We don't want to do that. Screw that.
No. I'm just wondering if there's other facets you can use.
I wasn't asking for that. I was just clarifying. It seemed odd to me sitting there seeing this range. Oh, by the way, the printer, it has to be at least 255. Well, why is the range what it is?
Yeah, and we may have, this may be legacy from some others. I mean, other IPP specs where we've done it the same way, and we're ambiguous about just this.
All right.
Okay. Right. Cross-reference. Yeah. Okay. Resolve. Whoops. Oh, conditionally required for features, right. I see why. Yeah. I actually prefer the RFCs too, but the IETF has said that normative reference should always be an STD if available. And they have a point because it'll resolve to the new RFC automatically if you actually pull the line.
Yeah, I guess this comment comes as a pair because in one place it referred to it by STD and the other it referred to it by RFC number.
Yeah, and it was a bug that it was referred to by RFC number. Except in the one rare case of 2119 that gets special treatment, as Mike said.
Okay.
But where do I get my conformance terminology? He found two references to 5234 that were screwed up. Okay, next, Pete. Oh, this is the STD 68 question again, but it's got fixed.
That is all 5013?
Yeah, that's...
Yeah, all the editorial type stuff.
Yeah, these are all editorial so far.
Well, editorial being the cross-referencing scheme in the Word document was screwed up.
Yeah.
They were automatically updating references. It was a pain in the butt to fix.
Yeah, it is. It really is. And as Bill found with model, you know, MFD model, eventually Word just begins to hash your document. You got to turn off all these features or it makes them worse. It finally becomes so confused it can't figure out, resolve most of the references. Okay, these are all editorial. Yep.
Add references.
Okay, we have rejected.
Oh, yeah, but this, wait a minute. SPD 68 comment again.
Yeah.
It's just, it's already
this was showing the inconsistency, and just both,
Okay. Okay, resolve.
Now we're figuring
68.
Right, and this is the figure that was added.
So that seems to be editorial as well.
Yeah, and apparently these got resolved, so I'm inclined to trust Mike that he resolved them and not proof them all.
Let's see. That's resolved.
Ah. Yep. And this was just missing graphics. And Mike found a couple other instances of these that he sent in a note. When he was looking for missing bracket, you know, misused parentheses, he found a couple more. So, those are they. And that's that document. So with these pretty small edits, when Mike can get to it, hopefully we'll start a formal vote. 2 weeks.
But the only major change is to add that additional explanatory text to the password ranking.
Right, yeah, with the additional, the actual editorial, you know, clarification on the password supported guy. Okay, next slide, Pete. Okay, right, and we have just resolved, reviewed, and resolved all of those, approved all of those changes. Okay. This is now basically the key ones that were rejected or resolved that were non-trivial, but we just looked at them all. IPP Everywhere is currently in a prototype draft, and the reason Mike didn't advance it from prototype yet was he wanted to have this review and probably a review 2 weeks from now at IPP meeting. I have to talk with him. So that we can go into working last fall next month. He has prototyped all the features in it, but as he observed the other day on an IPP or maybe an SC call, we have indeed added some features fairly recently again to IPP everywhere, so he didn't want to advance it further in its status. Okay. Pete, if you could bring up IPP everywhere.
Stop at any of these that I find?
Yeah, that would be my suggestion. These, what you are, you know, after we got through that boilerplate, what you are now seeing is the latest typos or and or new features, and you'll see them when they appear. Okay, right, yeah, okay. These were a fair number of them, the references, at this point.
Yeah, those editorial ones I'll just skip by. Brackets instead of parentheses.
Another reference.
Another reference.
Has joined the conference.
I think the state is that in most cases the new content was added in the previous draft. That is, it doesn't show as redlined here. And we have already reviewed it. But Mike wanted to keep it at prototype and not go to stable until we had gone, oh, okay, yeah, seems reasonable to go into working group last fall, meaning Mike issue a stable document so we can do that.
Okay, this is mostly formatting?
Yeah.
Or the multi-desk?
Host, there was a definition that was added there. You could fun by.
Oh, well.
Right.
I'm looking for the tags out in the column.
One to two.
Yeah. This is a new requirement in the HTTP features. You know, what you're supposed to do if you are a really well-behaved IPv implementation in your transport layer. And these are best practices, you know, here, which are, or in some cases, they're requirements like must. And this was, I can't remember whose comment, might have been Randy's comment, actually, but from the last face-to-face. Okay, references, titles, inserting the word required in the tables to make, not instead of just saying IPv everywhere operations, required operations, this was a consistency. And there were a couple of notes added, and we can look at note 10, which is the new note. Okay, URI, oh, this is related to the host value, that new section we just saw, and must not use link local addresses, and this was the discussion we had on the mailing list about why link local addresses have gone from pretty unsafe to completely unsafe to be using in URI. And then scroll on, Pete. Oh, okay, I see 532, the title. This has a comment saying this section is addressing a Canon last call comment from raster conformance requirements.
All right, but it doesn't seem...
No, it's no substantive change. He's merely noting that that's why it is here.
Okay.
There was no change in the text.
Well, that's what I was trying to say. It didn't look to me...
No, it hadn't changed. He was just tagging it, saying, hey, this is the one from, you know, that we referenced from the PWG raster last call. And these are, again, the host value comments and notes that we had. Okay, existing semantics for additional or existing value tags. Okay, name with and without language. And here we, this is where we've added the stuff that says, you know, use Unicode network interchange format, this format, and don't use the C0 control characters or the DEL character in names, because if you do, it opens a security hole, not just here, but in protocols in general. It's a common problem right now, that if you put invisible control characters, ones that cause no display change, you can cause an apparent name mismatch when it isn't. Natural language gets this kind of same update. And Mike explains the evolution from RFC 1766 forward and has some examples of usage, like simplified Chinese. Notice that doesn't look like a language tag that we were originally familiar with because there's a script tag in it. And the new section on text with language and text without language, this is the same guy, and further says, don't use anything but character turn, line feed, and horizontal tab. Printers must transcode and filter values from MIBs and other sources to conform to these added restrictions. So we just said, yes, it may be dangerously true that other control characters were allowed in NVP ASCII and in SNMP admin string in MIBs, but squash them, as in presumably delete them, because they can't be meaningful. And then this new section on URI, which people should read for a moment. And I need to go let my dog in at the door. I'll be right back. Right. This URI section is the same deal about don't use link local addresses. They're inherently dangerous in URI. I mean, they have their uses, but not in URI. In their protocols that need to link local addresses, they're useful.
And IP addresses can change easily.
Yeah.
I assume that's what the DHCP clause is about.
Yeah, it is. And then, right, okay, these were bugs. It said for clients and printers, but there was actually a separate section for clients. Mike had just forgotten to delete the word client name. And then to make plural printers and to delete objects. Objects don't have conformance requirements. Printers do. Printer implementation.
Yes. That's a FISM, aren't it?
Yeah, it is.
And do we have that in the model?
I've never seen one.
I don't recall.
Yeah, I don't recall.
Do we actually have it in the XML schema? Maybe
yeah.
not.
No, I never seen it.
Possibly not. We probably should add it, Pete.
Yep, that's what I'm thinking.
It's becoming an extremely common format to be receiving these days in the era of digital photography.
All right, add that. I know it's included in for since we can have any MIME type there, but
if it's a common MIME type, it's nice. I mean, an important current common one. It's nice to list it.
Right. That's why I'd like to get it in there.
And this is the reference to content language headers that Mike used for part of that justification for the form and so on for natural language text. And again, the latest reference to the successor to the language tag registry.
Need some additional informative references. Which is going away anyway.
Yep, and that's it. So our task is to say, yeah, those looked reasonable. Turn a stable draft and let's have a short working group last call so that we can get into PWG last call here. Or maybe a little bit longer working group last call, as Mike put there. This is a steering committee issue whether we have PWG last call last up into the August meeting or not. I think the realistic difference is probably 2 weeks anyway, so maybe we just say, well, yes, it spans, it ends near, but spans the August meeting. That would take formal vote, in mid-August. And that would be the last PWG standards track piece of IPP everywhere, and our long-standing agreement within the IPP working group, for those not following it regularly, is if, as is likely, our two IDF RFCs, IPPS URL scheme and transport binding and the LDAP printer schema version 2, have not progressed to RFCs, surprise, surprise, we will keep the IPP everywhere spec as it now does, referencing LDAP printer schema version 1, simple punt, and we will write two paragraphs, one that describes the IPPS URI scheme as deployed for the last 8 years in TUFS, and one that is the actual excerpted ABNF from the draft and says, the registration of this, kind of schmoozes, the registration of this URI scheme is work in progress in IGF. And that way we will not hold up IPP everywhere progressing, since we know perfectly well how the IPPS URI scheme binds. It binds down to HTTPS instead of HTTP. So I think that is the end of this topic, unless there are other comments or suggestions here. Mike has on and off availability for the next 2 months, including some interruptions up into August again, when he has to make a trip out to California. I think he's expecting to attend the August meeting, but possibly by phone. So if we move on to media standard names, see if you can pull that link. It says, didn't get a chance to finish the update, but we have one item to discuss. And so presumably that one item, was described in that slide you just went off of, I hope. I don't know where else we're going to find it.
You want me to go forward, or?
Maybe if you can pull that URI link.
Well, it's coming.
It's posted.
Yeah, it's not there. You're downloading the wrong. No.
Okay. Oh, here it is. Thank you, Pete.
And do you know what we're looking for?
Yeah, we're looking for this RollFed Media issue that you just showed.
On the slides.
Yeah.
Go back to the slides.
That's the problem. Probably Mike's slide is as good as looking at the document about, you know, what is the issue. So, as Mike observes, the definition is insufficient for media ready. One of those nice to have, but darn it, not too many printers actually implemented or implemented correctly. And it does not distinguish between different roles. And so Mike's proposal is to stick role into the ABNF. This is to fix the, you know, format of the name. And it says, finally, the short form without source name is only used for single role printers. Ah, right. Which, of course, there are some of, but turns out role-fed printers fairly often do have multiple roles. So that was the ambiguity about media ready.
Man, that's way out on the corner. That's way out on the corner base.
Not for sure.
Not for big iron printers, I would think.
Yeah, I guess we do have some roll feds now.
Would you have multiple roll inputs? Isn't that what this talking about is a printer that has multiple rolls all installed and available at the same time?
Yeah.
Yes.
I don't know.
Way out in the corner.
Because you usually want to get it for the roll feds today.
You cart one in and install it and then cart it out.
This may be really an edge condition, but I'm kind of inclined to say if Mike has a syntax that addresses this, because he identified this problem at Apple.
Yeah, I'm not pushing back on it at all, but it just... I find it.
You don't think it's available?
It's a pretty amazing printer. It's got multiple rolls of paper that weigh 300 pounds apiece.
Yeah. The only practice, you know, anybody IPP everywhere printer that would be roll fed, I think would be a cash register kind of thing, but that's still a single roll kind of deal. Unless you had a coupon printer.
Yeah, thermal barcode warehouse-based printer that's printed off dozens and thousands of them every night.
Yeah.
It's barely.
They maybe have multiple input rolls for different sizes and that kind of stuff.
Just trying to figure out if this is the section he's talking about. I don't think so. He's talking about where he min max release.
Yeah, he expanded the syntax to put that current source or whatever critter into the ABNF.
Yeah.
So it probably is on the very next page where he defines something to do about role. Maybe
well,
not.
Class N.
It may not even be exposed in the... Yeah, I think what it is Mike's... This is text that's in here. Remember, this is the document from April that we didn't quite finish reviewing, but we mostly reviewed. But Mike has, after this document, identified this role-fed media. So we're not going to see the changes for it yet, except in his slide. You know, he didn't update ABNF, is what I'm trying to say.
Well, as far as I know, I have no objection.
I mean, if it identifies a real problem for a real printer vendor, even one, that Apple has, you know, run up against, I figure, yeah, fine, Mike's really good at getting his ABNF right. I trust him, and besides, he's got a parser, so he checks my ABNF.
As long as it doesn't break the other cases.
Yeah, and it doesn't because it's got the keyword row in there that has been there all along, so that we're just extending the sub-tree, you know, the production for if the keyword is roll. Okay. Yeah, again, I'm kind of like, okay, this works. I think Mike described this issue, Pete, on the last IPP call, and it's like, yeah, okay, good, that works.
Yeah.
So I think that's MSN ready to move along.
And is the room in agreement with just go ahead and putting those new media types in the tables and in the registry?
Yes, the ones that you asked to be proposed to be registered, I would say yes. You put them in the tables and we should record as much, and then Mike should take the thing to a working group last call as quickly as possible.
Yeah, Mike's already pretty familiar with them.
Is cotton in there?
Cotton?
No. These are paper sizes.
Paper.
Oh. Media standardized names for sizes.
Okay, doesn't that include type and color?
I thought it did.
Oh, yeah, they're in there, but they're in different parts.
Right.
Yeah.
Cotton was one of the paper types that I was asked if IPP supports.
That's an interesting question because media type is words like stationery and envelope.
Right, and apparently.
No, it also includes photo and so on. Cotton, I suppose, could be bent to be put in there as a material.
Well, that's apparently there's. It is actually paper. It's cotton-based paper. Rag paper.
Right. That's my point. Is rag paper different than paper? I mean, yes, it is. You describe it as differently in the description. Do we want to make that somehow machine readable?
Well, I'll ask the people that sent me something and get a clear definition of what they want for cotton.
Because I think that the difficulty would be is that it's a synonym for stationery, presumptively, right?
Well, this
ordinary
is
ordinary paper.
This is a subclass of stationery. It's a very specific kind of
subclass
paper.
Of stationery of cotton. In
yeah.
that case, I would say yes. Let's please record. Ask Mike to just add it.
Right now.
Right. We've already added subclasses for photo and for stationery. Fine. Let's just do it.
Hmm?
With one T or two T's?
Two T's.
Two T's.
It only has one T in French.
Or trademark.
Yeah.
That's it on MSDN 2.
We might have just gotten through the day's activities in an hour and a half here. Yeah, because these are the next steps we did. Good, we got some time to work on the PWG cloud ladder charts or to take the rest of the afternoon off, as people feel. Okay, first of all, we will continue the current interoperability test through August, possibly through October, because Mike wasn't able to release the April release yet. And then we will shift to the next interoperability test, which will be IPP everywhere. It'll be 2.0 plus and some more enhancement for 2.1 and 2.2. Mike has seen only a few printers that claim 2.1, and I think he mentioned to me the other day he's not yet seen a printer that claims 2.2, although he knows of some printers that he thinks probably could claim 2-2. IPP Everywhere, we're going to finish this prototype draft spec and send it to last call and formal vote and do this virtual interop event that I just mentioned in the fourth quarter of this year, which will probably span into the following, you know, first quarter. IPP Multifunction, we hope to have interim, we have initial drafts. We'll have interim working drafts of scan service and fax out this year. We'll have initial working drafts of other specs starting in Q3. And the particular ones, shared infrastructure extensions, we were going to start yet in June. But I can tell you right now, I'm not going to have time to get to it. Maybe a sketch draft, Pete, that just gave us, like, here's what I think the command names are, and I'll just work with you on them. But the main draft that Mike and I want to work on next is system control service, not just for CWMP, but in general. Because system control service brings us the rest of the functionality that we never had from DPA itself, so that the DPA server object, our system object or system control service, can create an IPP printer object, to wit, a queue with default. There is currently no way to do that.
And I originally called it server. You guys didn't like it, so it's system.
Yeah, I know. And you know what? I personally like server because of DPA, but I recognize that system worked a lot better with the printer MIB and a whole lot of IETF MIBs that think that host systems are the things you manage. I know. It was server there ever since when. That's where we put it in as a root of server. That lot of good it did us. We really need more editors to help and to pick up these specs, these existing easy-to-write IPP bindings, follow up Mike's style and fax out, for the other semantic model standard multifunction services that have been completed, any. And co-editors for scan service, well, in fact, we need a primary editor for scan service because, you know, Mike's willing to do it, and so am I, but we honestly need a primary editor who has some familiarity with scan and could work on that spec because it's a fairly meaty spec. Other than that, we mean to go to formal vote here basically in August on the last specs in the first phase in IPP Everywhere. IPP mobile printing capabilities, and that's partly driven by the needs of various operating system vendors who need us to finish this darn thing so they can commit it to their new spooler updates, and printer vendors who need to be able to write the stable version thereof. Do one of several things. Take a break for 15 minutes and then look at cloud ladder charts some more, or adjourn, or opinion.
Well, I think that's something we'll put to the group. Are we saying that the IPP session is complete?
The only other thing we could do is look at LDAP printer schema, and I really would like to have Mike here when I did that, because the updates were rather detailed.
So we'll close IPP. Does anyone have an objection to taking a 15-minute break and coming and working on cloud ladder diagrams?
For a while. Maybe not another 2.5 hours.
Does anyone want to do that?
Well, I know every time you ask, it's quiet, so you ask it in the way that
does anybody have any objections?
Anybody?
Silence, is it?
Well, we'll take silence to say, realizing that, you know, you, Pete, and Ira are making the most comments. The rest of us are sort of nodding or objecting. If the two of you want to continue, we will. Larry is on the line. At least he was before. Larry,
yeah, I'm here.
He does have some diagrams. I think first thing we want to talk about is whether those diagrams are of the form we intend. And then we can go back either working with the diagrams or go back to work and complete the different processes and the table discussion. So, fine, I think it is decided that we will take a 15-minute break, come back at quarter of the hour, and resume yesterday afternoon's discussion on the sequence diagrams.
I'll be back in 10 minutes.